WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. As the Serbian president Slobodan Milosevic stands trial in The Hague for crimes against humanity, a new PBS documentary tells the story of the nonviolent movement that helped overthrow him. Bringing Down a Dictator will premiere on many PBS stations March 31st. It focuses on the group Otpor, which means resistance in Serbian. It was formed by a small group of college students in 1998. My guest, Serge Popovic, was a founding member. He was one of the group's strategists, and he wrote the group's training manuals. After the overthrow of Milosevic, Popovic was elected to the parliament. He also serves now as environmental affairs advisor to the Serbian prime minister. Otpor was a nonviolent movement of young people. It used rock music to help draw people out. Instead of force, Otpor often used street theater and humor to ridicule Milosevic and strip away some of his power by making him look foolish. For instance, during an eclipse, Otpor took to the streets with a long telescope its members had constructed. When you looked through it, you saw that Milosevic was the butt of the joke.
We organized a small action, inviting the newspapers and photographers and cameras and people in Belgrade. So we made a four meters long telescope on which end there was a kind of made comet. Head of comet was, of course, the head of Slobodan Milosevic, and tail was melting. So one was looking through that telescope the day of the eclipse. Well, of course, everybody was speaking of the eclipse, you know how it was, could see the Slobodan Milosevic falling. And that was the very sympathetic message, and the papers were full of pictures of that telescope for days. And it was cheap, it was very, very simple to organize, and it was very, very strong message, because, you know, in Serbia as well as anywhere in the world, you have that superstitious. So if you're speaking on the eclipse and there is a sign, and we wanted our action to be a sign, a lot of very primitive people generally supporting Milosevic will start thinking, there must be some kind of, you know, craftsmanship inside that. And that was a very good message. Another one was on Milosevic's birthday. Otpor prepared a cake consisted of parts of Serbia and Yugoslavia, which Milosevic has lost in wars. So it was the whole ex-Yugoslavia on the cake, but you have the one slice for Slovenia, another slice for Croatia, third slice for, I don't know, Bosnia and Herzegovina, and last slice for Kosovo. And there was a very small part of the cake still intact in the middle, on which it was written Dedinje, which is the part of town, Belgrade, the richest part of time where Milosevic's family lived. It was on cover page of all papers, and it was, you know, it was like you were joking with a guy who is so dangerous, who is the Balkanian butcher number one. And that gave people a hope that there are the kids in its country who can joke with Milosevic. To leave them to joke with you, you will have all cover pages and whole nation will laugh to you. To arrest them, which means that you're giving them the credits to being a very big threat to your regime. And it is the in policy of nonviolent struggle to put your enemies in no winning scenario.
It seems that Otpor was primarily a movement of younger people. I know you tried to get everybody in it, but I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that most of the people were probably in their teens and their 20s, maybe their early 30s.
General average age of the movement was 21.
Yeah. So I know, like in the United States, for instance, in the 60s and 70s, when there was a big youth-oriented anti-war movement, that there was often generational differences. The parents were angry with the children for protesting. Families were kind of breaking apart over political differences. Was anything similar happening in Serbia when so many of the young people were going into the streets and protesting Milosevic?
Well, the parents were the very important target group of Otpor, because those kids were, you know, just shaming their parents for sitting and doing nothing. And this is the very strong message to the parents, because even those who were supporting Milosevic were first parents and then Milosevic supporters.
So even parents who supported Milosevic, you think eventually were so worried about their children and how Milosevic was targeting them that they turned against Milosevic?
Nobody likes to see the children or the friends of his children arrested.
So every time Milosevic arrested a student, you think two more parents started to hate Milosevic?
two more students and three more parents.
Right. Now, you wrote a lot of the tactics for the group, and you wrote some of the training literature. Were there other young people's movements, student movements that inspired you, and things that you took as kind of lessons?
Not long time ago, I was watching that Force More Powerful movie and saw how the Afro-American activists are preparing each other to be arrested. And it was almost the same thing we were doing with our kids. Almost the same thing. Two different continents, two different struggles, but completely same model. And you know what is interesting about that? They were both successful.
Mm-hmm. Did Tiananmen Square scare you? Because here you have this like student movement that for the first few days, it looks great. I mean, it's peaceful. Young people are out there. They're protesting. But it's almost like a carnival. It's a happy occasion. And then the police move in and students are butchered. And that unleashes a terrible crackdown that lasts for years. Were you afraid of a reaction like that?
No. Tiananmen Square is a great example of very big trap, usually coming to the successful movements. The first lesson is that you must have the winning record. Your complete strategy must rely on a policy of small victories. You know, it is one step and then proclaim the victory and then another step, because success born success, and people will follow successful movements. The great experience on tragedy on Tiananmen Square was that students had some demands in China, and they were close to win those demands, and government was ready to step back and to accept their demands, but then their leaders were, you know, drunk of their success, and they were like, we will stay for a little bit longer and ask for a little bit more. And then the military forces from Manchuria were brought, and they were smashed to hell. And it's still non-democracy in China. This is the very important lesson for all nonviolent movements. And that's the sentence: you must know when and how to proclaim the victory.
Give me an example of a victory that you proclaimed. You said, hey, we won this one, and then you move on to the next event.
Absolutely. We did a very big event at January the 13th, which is the Orthodox New Year, and we invited maybe 20, 30,000 people in Republic Square on Belgrade for a New Year's celebration. And that was probably the most risky action, because it is the habit in Serbia to wait for that important date on the street. And those people came there searching for fun. And of course, at midnight, there was, you know, concert announced to start, but we put the drummers, because the Otpor relied a lot on the rock music, on the stage. We were drumming for maybe 15 minutes so people can feel the New Year is coming, and then we break the thing. And through the very big screen, we were absolutely, you know, people were absolutely shocked and frozen, shown the dozens of faces of those people who were killed in Milosevic's war. And then we have broken the celebration and say, okay, this was it. This is the year with capital T. This year, the life must finally win in Serbia. So go home now. No reason to celebrate anything right now. And let's see each other next year on the same place, so we can have the reason to celebrate things. And do you know what is interesting? It happened. It was the January the 13th of the year 2000, the year in which life finally won in Serbia. And 1 year after that, it was a very big celebration on the Republic Square. But that was typical risky action, in which we break the celebration, send the people home, make the national story, on which message was very clear. No reason to celebrate anything was one message, and he will be done in a year, meaning on Milosevic, on another. That was typical action. Okay, we could stick those. In Serbian history, there is no politician who will send 30,000 people home. In each country, probably in the United States of the America, every politician will try to speak to them for hours while they're listening. We are probably the first who are using sending people home as a very strong message.
Okay, so that New Year celebration, your message was, this is the year, it's his last year. And in fact, it was his last year. In 2000, he lost the election on September 24th to Koštunica. But Milosevic refused to leave office. And in response, hundreds of thousands of Serbs converged on Belgrade and eventually occupied the federal parliament building until he conceded. Let's go back to the beginning of that. Let's go back to September 24th when Milosevic refused to concede the election, even though it was clear that he lost. What did the leadership of Otput decide to do?
Actually, it was all the part of the plan. The key campaign in removing Milosevic wasn't the positive campaign for the Koštunica or the very important get-out-to-vote campaign, which brought all younger people who are usually voting abstinence to the ballot boxes. The key campaign was Otpor negative campaign named Gotovje, which actually means he's finished, thinking on Milosevic. Practically at the beginning of August, when the elections were called, we were preparing people for a big psychological victory. Each dictator is finished once the majority of the people know it's finished. So losing the elections was just a good proof to the people that Milosevic has the minority in the country. And it was really difficult to persuade them that he will still survive. So his last desperate moves were just a part of the scenario we prepared. Everything we should do was wait for him to proclaim the elections non-valid and then to proclaim the general strike. And all the people responded to that call.
So you proclaimed a general strike and everybody responded. What happened?
Actually, everybody proclaimed a general strike. Right. Syndicates, party leaders, Koštunica, Otpor, mm-hmm. school workers, everybody proclaimed a general strike. It was just a very logical movement. Well, sincerely speaking, I don't know who firstly proclaimed that. It was the logical explanation, a logical response. We knew it will happen.
And where were you during those days of the general strike?
Training people let's explain it this way. The Otpor deal with the opposition leaders was that there must be the day in which people from all Serbia will come to Belgrade. And Otpor's job was to do that, rising up the universities in Belgrade, keep students on streets for at least 7 or 8 hours a day. It was terrible. It was like between 20 and 30 kilometer marches around Belgrade and around Belgrade and around Belgrade and through the center of Belgrade and blocking the roads. So the Belgrade is, you know, energized enough to accept that energy coming from another cities at the October the 5th. So actually, I was dealing with the organization of those 5 or 6 days of very strong students' protests in Belgrade.
My guest is Serdjo Popović, a co-founder of the Serbian resistance group Otpor, which helped bring down Slobodan Milosevic. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Serdjo Popović, one of the founders of the Serbian resistance group Otpor, which is profiled in an upcoming PBS documentary called Bringing Down a Dictator. Would you describe what it was like in the streets on those days of the general strike in the days between the time that Milosevic refused to concede the election and the time that he actually was thrown out of office?
It was like a small miracle. You know, all Belgrade stopped and public transportation was parked all around the streets. And people were parking cars wherever they are because the general aim was to block the traffic. And traffic was smashed. And you could walk. I was walking with my girlfriend, taking her for a hand. And for example, if I would like to block the street, just pushing the container on the street, there would be 15 people helping me from a thin air. And that was like, you know, you could feel in the atmosphere that nothing is the same and that nothing will come back to normal before Milosevic leave. And that was very strong message to him. That was very strong message to the police also, because we developed the complete tactics towards the police, trying to avoid the physical conflict with them and telling them that there are absolutely no difference between the victims in the blue jeans, which were Otpor guys, and victims in the blue uniforms, which were the police guys, and that we are all the victims in the system. And in one moment, when people from the police recognized that it is not anymore opposition and Otpor against Milosevic, against the regime, but it was the people against Milosevic, they didn't want to be losers together with Milosevic. And of course, they could avoid shooting in the crowd because some of their own children were there.
Could you feel, was there like a moment when things shifted, when you realized that the police were going to be on your side and instead of shooting at you, they'd be supporting you?
Actually, it was very clear at the very beginning of the October the 5th, because during the day, columns were coming, columns of vehicles all through the Serbia. And it was very small resistance of the police. They built up the barricades all around the Belgrade. They had strict orders to stop those people going to Belgrade, which was practically ridiculous because there is no police force which can stop the column 40 kilometers long. And actually, as day was coming, it was practically very clear that police will build the barricades but not defend them. And what happened in front of the federal parliament, because of course we were all surveilling the police as well as they were surveilling us, is that the people in the federal parliament and a building of national television were given strict orders to shoot to the crowd, but it never happens. They never shoot to the crowd.
At what point did you know, this is it, it's over, we've won?
Well, I know far before the October the 5th, but generally October the 5th at 5 p.m. when a special police squad surrendered to the people running around with Otpor and Serbian flags through the city, it was pretty obvious.
And what did you do then?
Oh, me, myself, I misused my position of a leader of the march and took the car in which there was a strong loudspeaker, put a petrol inside the aggregate, which was moving the loudspeaker, and start a long march from Otpor's office in Knez Mihailova towards the Slavia Square in Belgrade, producing impossible techno noise, which attracted between 20 and 30,000 people to one of the biggest parties I've ever been.
And what was the first day like after Milosevic stepped down? How did
sunny, nice, with all the people camping around the Belgrade. It was the tremendous experience for me because all of my life changed that day. The sun was rising, federal parliament was black and smoked, and there were very big crowd of very happy people around, still with flags, still on streets, because we had the strict orders to stay on streets 2 or 3 days after the October the 5th because of the possibility of, you know, parts of the army react or whatever. And we should protect that with our own bodies. And that day I gave the promise to myself that this part of my life is over and that maybe I will do some politics or something else for the rest of my life, but it will never influence and play with my life as it was before the October the 5th. And I still stick to that promise.
Well, in fact, you are in politics now. You ran for the parliament in Serbia. You won. You're in parliament. You're an environmental activist within parliament. In a way, I
yes, but it is not influencing my life anymore.
Right.
I finally had some time, you know, for friends, for my girl,
right,
for my parents,
right.
For fishing, for all those things that were the sacrifice to the revolution in 2 years of Otpor and even before during the Democratic Party's period.
Having seen what politics was like and how corrupt it was under Milosevic, I would have thought you might have like hated politics so much you wouldn't have wanted to enter it. Why did you want to run for office?
Actually, I was the highly ranked functionary of Democratic Party even before Otpor. Mm. 1996, I was elected as the youngest member of Belgrade City Parliament, and politics was my decision from 1993. One of my promises and promises of my friends in Otpor was that it is not only the changing the regime we are wanting, but the changing of system. And system is so old-fashioned, so bureaucracy, so corrupted that there are a lot of years invested in its reconstruction. And each of us decided to change it in our own way. My old friends who are still running for Otpor campaigns, they decided to change the system from the outside. And some of us, like Ivan Andrić and me and others who are in the parliament, we decided to change it from the inside. And actually, I'm just continuing my mission.
Have you been watching the Milosevic war crimes trial?
Rarely. I get enough of Milosevic.
why aren't you watching it more? You fought so hard to get rid of him. Here he is on trial now in The Hague. Why aren't you watching it?
Unfortunately, I consider Hague very expensive circus, which is giving Milosevic credit to once again get back to the political scene and prove the fact he was basing his tragical national policy on, that there is an international community against Serbs. They're even denying the existence of Kosovo Liberation Army. So watched from the angle of people in Serbia, Milosevic is getting credits for that accusation. And I'm very, very sad that is happening and that may strengthen the retrograde powers in our society.
Have you been in the position yet where there have been any protests against the way you've used your power in parliament?
Actually, yes. And there is a big difference because we are communicating with our political opponents and people who are who do not agree with our policy. And this is absolutely new tradition in Serbia. You know, we have Otpor and NGO groups monitoring the parliament. Actually, the president of the parliament invited all those who would like to be there. And it is the beginning of good democratic change in my country, in which, of course, civilian control over state organs is the basic stone for democracy.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Sergio Popovic is one of the people featured in the PBS documentary Bringing Down a Dictator, which premieres on many PBS stations March 31st. He's now a member of the Serbian parliament. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.